You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday, May 24th, 2024. This is Grandpa Dan. I'm streaming at RadioAlbion.com. I'm glad you joined us to wrap up your work week. It is Friday, which means we're continuing on with our trend, Funny Fridays, bringing back the humor to wrap up your week. Before we get off into that, as always, I'll remind you we have our Sven Longshanks support links here in the description page for the Daily Nationalist. I will continue to encourage you to drop him an email, postcard, a few bucks here or there in the gifts and go, whatever you can do. It is appreciated. Sven appreciates it. I appreciate it. And we're going to keep on soldiering on with that until Sven is released. Well, it is Friday. I thought we'd have a little fun. I was thinking of something that stereotypes and humor have in common. And that is they have to be based in a certain element of truth. One of the reasons that I find, for instance, leftist humor to be completely unfunny is because it always comes down to just being mean. You know, basically some form of just making fun of people. And there's oftentimes little to no truth involved. So it's just ugly name calling. For something to be funny, there needs to be an element of truth. And this works the same when it comes to stereotypes. Stereotypes only work if there's an element of truth in it. And you say, yeah, I can see that. This is most evident when you can look at humor or jokes or whatever that are talking about stereotypes when they're directed at yourself. And you can look at that and say, yeah, I can see that. You know, it's kind of funny. As you all well know, we're an international audience here at Radio Albion. And I thought we'd have a little fun talking about the stereotypical American. Now, you see a lot of this as you go about online. People talk from Europe primarily, but people around the world, and they have this stereotypical view of Americans. And I thought we'd get into that a little bit and talk about some of this. You know, what makes the stereotypical American? And I personally find it funny because there is an element of truth in it. And again, when it comes to humor, there has to be an element of truth. Otherwise, you're just, you know, making fun of people and calling them names. And as long as there's an element of truth, again, we should be able to look at ourselves and laugh and say, yeah, there is a certain amount of fun. I know, like, there are a lot of people in the world I see people referring to Americans, you know, as mutts or something like that. And I remember this really became a thing several years ago. And I got asked about it. What do you think? You're an American. What do you think of this thing where people go around referring to Americans as mutts? And I just thought it was funny because, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, white Americans in particular are, you know, because and you know, white Americans get offended by that, you know, because they don't have that identity that Europeans have. The German has an identity as a German. Well, I know that's fading, you know, because of the mess that Europe's in. But generally speaking, you know, the Englishman views himself as an Englishman, the Frenchman as a Frenchman. And if you ask your average white American, well, what are you? Well, I'm a white American. And they can't tell you, though, what lineage they come from. They can't say, well, I'm English. I happen to live in America. And this and thus the term mutt is somewhat applicable because you've lost your European heritage. So you just go with this blanket term of white. But yet again, to the German or the Frenchman or the Swede, you just seem like, I mean, you're white, but you're kind of a mutt because you can't point to your true European heritage. You're just an Amerimutt. And I don't get offended by this because, again, I see a certain amount of truth to it. So you don't get offended. You just laugh at it and say, yeah, you know, in a way, there's a certain amount of truth to that. But again, people around the world, they have these stereotypical views of Americans. And I thought we'd poke some fun at some of these views, not because they're untrue, but because looking at the element of truth involved in it. Now, one of the first things you have to laugh about is your average American has this view of what it means to be American. And to say this view is outdated is an understatement. Your average American has this view, you know, the rugged individualist. We're the ancestors of those that went out by themselves and settled the West, tamed the wild Western frontier, brought society, built an industrial powerhouse. But you look around at your American today, and they still view themselves like that, you know, like an old Clint Eastwood Western. And yet the reality is this very, very, this very, very different thing. Americans view themselves still in some form of, that's right, storming the beaches of Normandy, settling the Wild West, bringing law and order to a Wild West town or something. You ain't Wyatt Earp. You can't figure out your pronouns. You can't run 20 feet without being winded. Is you're kind of more your average American, yet they still see themselves as what people saw Americans as, you know, years ago, in days gone by. I read a deal sometime back, and I don't even remember exactly the context, but the general term of it was, when Europeans or people from Asia, when Europeans or people from Asia first come to America, you know, they come to America, and the one thing that strikes them immediately is they just cannot believe how fat everybody is. If you think, ask anybody outside of America, again, Americans have this self-view, this distorted funhouse mirror view of themselves as, you know, Clint Eastwood in one of those old 70s Western films. And yet people from other parts of the world come to America, and the first thing that strikes them is, my gosh, these people are fat. There's this stereotypical view of the stereotypical American, and they're all obese. Remember years ago, the LA America Bear meme, and the fat America Bear riding around on his mobility scooter in his American flag t-shirt. And people from Asia and Europe, they're shocked when they come to America and find out that that meme is more true than it's not. That's why the meme was funny. The meme was funny because there's an element of truth in it. As an American myself, and by the way, I'm happy to report that I'm not fat. I'm not in the shape that I was in, say, when I was 25 years old, that's for sure. But that's because I'm a long way from 25. I'm long past twice 25 years old now. And you just, your body starts giving up unless you're going to start taking testosterone supplements, and I don't do that. But by and large, this perception that the average American fat is true. Now, because I have some years on me, I remember when it wasn't that way. And I've kind of touched on this before. But I remember being a little kid. I remember when I was a little kid. So this was like back in the 70s. And you know, if you're my age, you remember. You would go back then, you went to family reunions. People used to have family reunions. And you go to the family reunions, and all your extended family would come together. For some reason, we don't do that anymore. It used to be a big thing. Family reunions. Oh, so-and-so is holding a family reunion. Everybody in the extended family would go to these family reunions. Nobody does that anymore. We've lost that sense of family. But I remember being a kid, and again, if you're my age, you'll remember this too, and they would be a family reunion. You're a little kid, you go to a family reunion, and there'd be this one obese person that's a member of the family that would show up. And everybody, you know, all you kids would be snickering, you know, and it's like, oh, wow, they're so fat. It was like going to the circus. Did you got that one fat person in the family? It's like, oh my gosh, how does that person so damn fat? Oh, and you're trying to look without staring. And maybe your parents or your grandparents pull you aside and say, you kids quit being ugly now. Y'all quit snickering at the fat person in the family. But it was just so, you just weren't used to seeing it. You weren't used to seeing it. And yet there it was. Now, everybody is the fat person and the family. I look back and I remember. I remember those days and being kids and snickering at the fat person and the family. Nobody gets to do that anymore because everybody's the fat person. Everybody is the fat person in the family. That is the norm now. Now, you get off into questioning why that is. I believe it's the composition of the food. I hear a lot of people say, well, it's because Americans have a sedentary lifestyle. Because now every... No. Because you see a lot of these fat people. And they ain't sitting around doing no damn computer job. They just fat. They just fat. You see people in manual labor jobs out there killing themselves because they like 400 pounds or something. They out there just sweat coming off of them. You're like, how are you that fat? And you out doing manual labor in the sun. I don't understand. It's the food. They don't want to tell you they're poisoning you. They don't want to tell us they're poisonous. But nonetheless, the stereotypical view of the American as being fat is by and large true. And you go around this country, and usually one of the things that I think is also a very American thing is the handicap tag, that blue tag hanging off the rearview mirror, or they just put it on the license plate. That way they get the good parking spots. And you go to some store, and they always have all those handicap spots up there at the front. And I'm going to tell you, the vast majority of the time, you watch, and somebody rolls up in there, and they get out. You expect to see a wheelchair. It's right there on the license plate. They're handicapped. They must be in a wheelchair. You think they're going to get out and get the wheelchair and get in it? Or they're going to get out and like they're gimpy, like maybe they had polio or some shit. And they're going to get out and they got the little leg braces and they're going to, and you like, maybe you're going to spring into action, run over there and help them. Hey, let me help you get in your mobility scooter. But nope. No, you watch. And the vast majority of the time, they crawl out of their car. Because you kind of looking. It's like, I wonder what their handicap tag is. I wonder what their handicap is. I see they got their handicap tag. What is their handicap? And the vast majority of the time they get out and they're 500 pounds. That's their handicap. They ought, if that's the handicap, they should have a separate handicap. They should have a handicap parking spot right in the front for actual handicapped people. Like if you're in a wheelchair or you're walking around on crutches or something like that, you should be able to park up there at the front. But they should have a fat ass tag. They should have a fat ass tag, you know, instead of the wheelchair, they just have like a big blob, like a Jabba the Hutt outline. And you hang that off your rearview mirror. And instead of parking in the front, you park in the back because your fat ass needs to waddle. And then maybe you'll get some of that off in the heat. Not parking up front. If anybody needs to be walking, it's these fat people. And then they get out. They slither out in their blob form. Just kind of like a caterpillar. Because you can't even see their legs. They got so much fat hanging down, it looked like they got 2-foot legs. Because their belly hanging down. The ass hanging down. They got an ass in the front. They got an ass in the back. And they just kind of got these little stick legs walking around. Then they get in there as soon as they can. As soon as they get it in there, they get on that mobility scooter. If they uptown, they bring their own mobility scooter. That's where you know. That way you know. You, when they bring their own mobility scooter, because they're in like a minivan. You see these people, and they're like a minivan. They're driving around the minivan, and they got this little rack built onto the rack back of the minivan for their own personal mobility scooter. You already know they're fat person. They get the mobility scooter. They plop down on that poor, poor mobility scooter. I feel sorry for the mobility scooter. Imagine that. They ought to make a dually wheel like a one-ton pickup mobility scooter for these people. And they plop down on the mobility scooter and off they go to go buy some more slop. Of course, now you're talking about fat people. You're talking about mobility scooters. It brings you to another quintessential thing that you think about when you think of America. And that's Walmart. If there is one outfit, one store that makes you think of America, it's got to be Walmart. That's where the mobility scooter people, they love to go to Walmart. Now, if you don't have Walmart, or you live in Europe or some Asian country, and you're not familiar with the experience, if you ever come to America, once you overcome the initial shock of seeing how fat everybody is, part of your tour, see, maybe you come to America, maybe you live in Japan, you know, And you come to America because you have this view of America, which is never based in reality. Maybe you're from Italy or Sweden, and you're like, man, I had this view of America. And you gotta, maybe you come as a tour group, and they're going to try to take you to these different tour sites, you know. Oh, you're going to go see, this is Gettysburg. Oh, you're going to go see the Jefferson Memorial. Or you're going to go see George Washington or Thomas Jefferson's house or some other crap. Go see some statues, some monuments, whichever ones I haven't torn down yet. I don't think there's a lot left. But anyway, you know, you're going to go see some museums. No, you ain't getting the taste of America going and seeing no damn museum. You need to make it a point. You need to tell the tour, because if they have like an open time and you say, the tour guide says, is there anywhere you would like to go see? Something, we've got open time. Where would you like to go? You hold up your hand and say, we want to go to Walmart. We just want to see, or you need to buy something. No. We just want to see the sights. If you want to truly take in modern Americana, you've got to go to Walmart. Now, be warned, it's something to see, to truly experience America. You can go back to Japan, you can go back to China, you can go back to Sweden or France, and you can tell people you have truly experienced America. Because if you don't go to Walmart, you can't go back to your home country and tell them you saw America. You're like, I went to America. Did you truly experience America? Yes, I did. I went and saw where Gettysburg happened, and I went and saw this historical site and that historical site. I went and saw the Hoover Dam. I went and saw it all. No, you didn't. You have not experienced America unless you go to Walmart. Then you know. You will truly grasp all the aspects of modern day America if you go to Walmart. Now, I've got good news. It doesn't matter which one you go to because they're all the same. You don't have to worry about, hey, have I picked the wrong Walmart? If I truly, GPD, if I truly want to experience America, where do I go? I got to pick the right Walmart? No, they're all the same. It doesn't matter. Just pick a Walmart and go to it, and you're going to get a taste of America. Now, there's going to be different aspects of that. You might get a very, very diverse dose of America as certain ones, but you will get the overall true feeling of Americana, modern Americana, if you go to Walmart. Now, on the surface, you're going, and again, I have to warn you, Walmart is hell on earth. I do not go to Walmart unless I absolutely have to. It is true hell on earth. If you're unfamiliar with America and you go take a Walmart tour, and I highly recommend you do it so you understand what you're talking about. But again, be warned. Your first reaction is going to be, why would anybody volunteer to come to this place? These people come here. Why? Who would voluntarily go to this hell on earth that is Walmart? And it can't be explained. Some things have to be truly experienced. You know, it's like if you talk to somebody that's a war veteran and they were in the war, and you know, you ask them, it's like, Grandpa, what was it like in the war? They don't even want to talk about it. Because how do you explain it to somebody? How do you explain, you know, the aspects? People dying, bombs going off, never knowing if it's your time, the stench of blood and gunpowder and the things that people just can't understand it unless you've experienced it. Thus, it is the same with Walmart. I can't explain it. You just have to experience it. Everything from the people on mobility scooter, running, you know, the odds of running into, you know, enraged diversity somewhere. People walking out the front door stealing and nobody cares. The random jarring screaming announcements over the loudspeaker. Customer service in this department, and knowing that customer service is never coming. Some fool is in a certain department and is looking for customer service in that department, and you keep hearing it again. Like 5 minutes later, customer service requested in this department. Oh, and by the way, it's an automated voice. customer service in this department. And you're like, why does that keep going off? Is it broken? No, it's because there's some poor sap there who's waiting for customer service that's never going to come. It's never going to come. If you come to Walmart, you will truly experience all aspects of what you will understand more about modern day America than hours spent on the internet. 30 minutes in a Walmart and you'll get it. When you're dealing with the average American, you're going to understand what you're dealing with by going to 30 minutes to any Walmart anywhere in the country. Now, the American experience of Walmart runs even deeper. There is a philosophical element. If you go to a rural Walmart, for instance, you go to a small town, you're like, well, I want a little less chance of getting an extreme vibrant diversity experience, so I want to go to a Walmart in a rural town. When you go to the rural town, you'll see what amounts to, I don't know, one giant falling down meth lab or something. You know, you know, what was obviously once a proud town square will be payday loan places. This is just really low tier stuff. And out on the edge of town, there will be this big, ugly Walmart. And, you know, because what was once a thriving community with a bunch of small businesses owned by people in the community and they all propped each other up, you know, was destroyed by the giant corporate Walmart that came into town. The thing about it is, see, you think, well, what does that have to do with it? Because you see, when a small town has a whole lot of small businesses owned by people that live in that community, the money circulates in that town. Once in a while, people passing through the town or visiting relatives, they come and they spend money, and that money increases the wealth in the town. When all of that gets destroyed by Walmart, which was their business practice for years, that's how they really got going, was destroying small rural communities. They come in, and once they destroy all of the competition, all of the money that gets spent in Walmart goes to Walmart corporate. In other words, it's a big sucking sound. All the money goes out of the town. It all gets spent at Walmart, and it goes to the Walmart corporate, which basically means it's going to wind up, you know, on Wall Street. The money leaves the town. That's why the town's poor. You're sitting around going, why is this town so poor? I'm looking at these old buildings around the square. Obviously, this used to be a thriving community. Why does it look like this now? Because instead of the money staying in town and supporting the community, everything that gets spent, most of it winds up at Walmart, which means it leaves the town. So you can go experience America at any Walmart and you get a true, deep understanding of the American experience. Now, speaking of rural America, I do got to forewarn you. There is a difference, by and large, there is a pretty startling difference between rural Americans and city-dwelling Americans. Rural Americans just kind of don't give a crap. You know, I mean, they just don't. Whether, you know, they're just regular true country folk and they really don't care what people in the cities are doing or whatnot or whatever. Rural Americans basically kind of live in their own world. Urban Americans are a different creature altogether, by and large. It's almost like people that live in cities in America have an inferiority complex, you know? Like if you come from Europe, you know, it's like, oh, I come from this European country. You're going to find out that I think urban Americans have like an inferiority complex and they're always trying to copy. You know, what these other countries are doing. Oh, y'all have such a good man. We've got mass transit here in insert city USA. And you're like, oh, really? Because I'm familiar. You know, like, see, you're from Japan. And you're like, we have mass transit. We go everywhere. People don't have to have cars here, you know, in Japan. We have mass transit here in urban America as well. And they show you the mass transit. And you're like, whoa, I'm not getting on that filthy thing. Might be lice on it. It's like urban Americans have an inferiority complex because they know our cities suck compared to European cities or Asian cities. They do. They suck. They're filthy cesspits. And they have an inferiority complex. So they're always running around trying to make up for it, you know, trying to compensate. They're always coming up with these ideas to be more like Europe. You know? They're always coming up, we're going to have mass transit. We need to have mass transit. It's always city people. You know, rural Americans coming up with this idea we need to have mass transit and that's going to take care of everybody. Only urban Americans come up with that. And they come up with it because they have an inferiority complex when it comes to European cities. Or even maybe Asian cities. They have an inferiority complex and we need to be more like Norway. We need to be more like these European. Never mind that the whole country is, you know, smaller than a state, one single state in America. It doesn't matter. The urban American has got to feed their inferiority complex. We need mass transit like they have there. This always gets laughed at by the rural Americans who just don't give a crap. Why would I want to get on your train zipping across the country? It's impractical. Doesn't matter. Urban Americans have an inferiority complex. They want to be more like Europe. Now, you have to understand, they haven't been to Europe and have no idea what your European country is like. Americans don't travel internationally. They don't. They live in America and watch TV. And that's what they see as what's your European country is like. They have no idea. Now, speaking of things that are quintessential Americans, you have to have two things. Guns and automobiles. People from other nations, from Europe, be it Europe or different countries in Asia, they don't understand either of these two things about Americans. Americans love their guns and Americans love their automobiles. Now, there's always, I pointed this out before, but there's always this, conception. Normie conservatives always have this thing about my guns, like they're a sacred object, that this is the one thing keeping tyranny at bay. Now, they have no perception that they already live in tyranny and the magic gun object has not protected them from said tyranny. And they always will boast and brag about if they come for my guns, that's the red line. They're going to shoot it out with the government if they come for their guns. Never mind, they go along with everything the government demands. The government has no reason to come for their guns, but they have this fantasy in their mind of making their brave last stand over their guns. Now, if you're from outside of America, you may have that conception as well. Americans are obsessed with guns, but it is, I believe, a secondary obsession. This idea that if the government went after Americans' guns, that it would just blow the country up. I don't think that's nearly as true. Because you have your average gun owner in America and they're obsessed with, being sure that they're within, the bounds of the law. They at the end of the day, most of them would hand their guns over. I do. I do believe that. But now let's talk about that other aspect. You want to know what would blow America up if the government came out tomorrow and said, we're confiscating everybody's cars in the name of the climate change. We're confiscating. You're not going to be allowed to own a car anymore. You will turn your car over to the government. That would blow this country up. Americans love their cars. You don't understand it. If you live in a little tiny country that you can just get on the bus and, everything is close because you don't have a real country because it's tiny. You just get on the bullet train and go to the other side of the country. It don't even need to be a bullet train because your country's smaller than the county I live in. You don't understand. Americans ain't playing when it comes to their cars. They're not. When you see these pictures on the internet and you see these guys driving around in their big, giant, jacked up four-wheel drive diesel pickup, you think you're going to take that away from him without a fight. He might give you you might talk him into giving up his gun, but I'm going to tell you, you ain't getting that diesel pickup from him. Not without a fight. Not without a fight. Now, the urbanites, who, again, have an inferiority complex to Europe, they come up with these ideas. Yes, we don't need cars. We're killing the planet. We don't need guns. We don't need cars. That's BS. They're just feeding their inferiority complex. I'm a better person. I want to be like Europe. You ain't getting Americans' cars without a fight. That's why they're trying to do it all sneaky, just like they do the gun control stuff. They're trying to be all sneaky with it. They're trying to push everybody into electric cars that won't actually go anywhere and cost too much. They're trying to ease it in. They're trying to creep it in and get Americans' cars from them because they know If they came in and just announced, we're taking everybody's cars. You don't need no cars. You're going to go ride the filthy bus or walk. They're going to be in for a fight. Now, I laugh because you have to understand, at least the gun thing is kind of a joke to me because, again, people that are obsessed with guns in this country, you know, Americans, they do. They act like they're a magic talisman. Like as long as they've got their gun locked up safely, as the government requires, and registered in their gun safe, that it magically protects them. It's like a barrier. It's like a magic charm. And it's really silly because they go along with everything the government tells them to do, but they still pretend they cling to this belief. And it's really by and large impractical. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not anti-gun by a long shot. And I do believe in people having guns and being able to protect themselves and whatnot. I do. I'm the classic American in that sense that, you know, yeah, I believe, you know, in the Second Amendment and people having a gun. And there's not a problem, obviously, with law-abiding people having a gun. But the practicality of it, the odds are, if you're a good gun-owning American, the odds of you ever having to use your firearm in self-defense, defending your home or your family, are actually very small, even in this crime-ridden hellhole. I mean, still, the odds of you ever actually having to pull your gun out and shoot somebody are still very small. Because you're going to do, you generally, you know, you're not going to go to the parts of town where all of that happened, where you would need to do that. You know, and people are going to question that. Like, if you go to the part of the city where you're going to have to whip out your gun and shoot somebody, first question anybody's going to ask is, well, what the hell were you doing over there? You know you don't belong there, white man. Why were you there in the first place? The practicality of it is very limited. The odds of you ever really having to use your gun in self-defense are very small. That's the reality. I laugh because you'll talk, living in America, you'll talk with Americans and they act like it could happen at any minute. You know, especially, this is especially funny when you're talking to rural Americans. You'll talk to rural Americans and they'll tell you, you know, I'm ready. You know, I've got my 45 strapped to my hip. You know, I've got my pistol strapped to my hip because, and you're looking around, you're like, you're standing in the middle of a cotton field. Ain't nobody gonna jump up out of the cotton field and attempt to attack you, and you're gonna have to defend yourself. You might have to shoot a snake or something, but that's about it. It's not nearly practical. You know, it's fine. I'm not against it, but it's not practical. Cars, on the other hand, I see people post on the internet and be like, what's this obsession with Americans and their stupid cars and their stupid trucks? Because we live in a huge country. You live in a... If you're from some one of these make-believe countries that I like to make fun of, and you know, we're just laughing with you if you're listening, you're from one of them countries, you know, we all cool like that. But really, if you're from Estonia or Lithuania, just get the hell out of here. You walk from one end of your country to the other. Yeah, you don't need no damn car. Well, just look at America. I always tell people, I like to, if you live in Europe, just take a map of just the state of Texas, not America, just the state of Texas, and set it right on top of, right on smack dab in the middle of Western Europe. And then tell me we don't need cars and pickups here in America. Everything is a long way off. Now, urban Americans in their inferiority complex to Europe, they want to pretend like the entirety of America is their little city. It's their city that they live in, and we could just be like Europe. But the rest of the country exists. If you go on from one end of the state of Texas to the other end of the state of Texas, you're going to have some way to do it. Ain't going to be on no jive-ass bus. I can tell you that. Oh, you could have a train. You could have a train. You could be like Europe and have a train, you see, and you take the train. Look at the damn state. What if you want to go to this particular podunk town right here in the state of Texas? You want to go to Balmoray. I'm whipping out a little time. You'd be looking it up. You want to go to Balmoray, Texas. You going to tell me that train track is going to wig-zag, ziggle-zag so you can go to Balmoray? Hell no. If they put a train, it's going to what? Go from Fort Worth, Dallas to Austin, and Austin to San Antonio, and San Antonio to El Paso. Or if you need to go to Balmoral, tough shit. What, they're going to drop you off in the middle of nowhere, West Texas? You're going to walk hundreds of miles. You didn't take the bullet train, going to drop you off in Marfa so you can go see them creepy lights. You're going to go to see the Marfa lights? Well, the bullet train drops off 300 miles away. How are you going to get there? It's completely impractical. You could not run rail lines to go to every little podunk town in just the state of Texas. I ain't even talking about America. I'm talking about just the state of Texas. Now, it's going to happen. You ain't going to get to see the creepy lights if you're going to take a train. You got to have a vehicle. You got to have. So that sound like typical Amerimut. You got to have it. You got to have. You got to have a vehicle. You have to have some kind of car. It ain't going to be no damn electric car either. That damn thing won't get you from one, even halfway to some places. And it's going to run out of juice. I was traveling with somebody. Oh, it's been several years ago. And we're rolling down. I'm just riding with them. And we're rolling down this little small highway, a little two-lane road. It was in good shape. It was a little two-lane road. It was in surprisingly good shape for an American road, which, because American roads are generally third world tier. But we're blasting along in this diesel pickup, of course, because it's America and it's Texas. And we're blasting along in the diesel pickup. And in a minute, somebody comes whipping around us in their Tesla. They're whipping around us in the Tesla. Look at that. That one fast golf cart, ain't it? And they kind of disappear out of sight. But see, it's a long stretch of road. Got a long way to go. We travel about 10 miles or so down this long stretch of road in the middle of nowhere. And guess who we catch? And we blast around. Black smoke billowing out the pipe around the Tesla. Who is now... When they passed us, they were probably running 80, 85, because they think they're going to get somewhere. But now, guess what? Their battery is Texas. It's Texas. You're going to run that air conditioner, and that air conditioner will be working. Plus, it's having to keep that battery cool. Now, Mr. Tesla is doing about 45, 50. And we're snickering and laughing because we know why he's doing 45 or 50. He just looked on his little computer screen and is telling him how far he got to go. He's got to go. It's telling him how far he's got to go to the next charging station. And he's looking at how far he's got left in his battery pack. And it ain't happening. Now he's limping along. Ain't going to happen. Not going to happen. Got to have it. Got to have your cars here in America. And you ain't taking them. We're going to run along because I got lots of other truly American things. The quintessential American. Patriotism and wars. Well, America Bear has his American flag t-shirt and then he's rolling on his mobility scooter. He's in his God bless America and God bless our troops. Got to have the patriotism, the view of wars. If you understand, Americans have no concept of wars. And this sounds weird if you're not from America, because America's involved in all these wars all over the world all the time. And you say, how can the American people have no concept, you know, of what war is? For the average American, war is a TV show. And I mean that. It's a TV show. That's all it ever means to an American. Because even like if you're a European, for instance, and you haven't experienced war in your country in your lifetime, and still yet you understood because your families have told you what it was like back in the war. Perhaps you had a grandparent or great-grandparent, and that those stories got told down, you know, handed down about how bad it was during the war. And so you at least, even from stories handed down in your family, you understand what war is like on your own soil and how bad it really is. See, Americans have lived insulated from that. War is a TV show. They watch it on TV. War is something that happens. That's why they always jump up and support these wars, and they never think, you know, well, it's a bad thing, because it's just a TV show. When they hear about a new war, when your average quote-unquote patriotic American hears about a new war somewhere on the planet, it's just like the new season of MacGyver coming out or some shit. You know, the A-Team. You hear they're bringing back the A-Team. They're rebooting. It's the same thing. It's just a new season of their favorite TV show is coming out, and they're going to get to cheer the latest cause for the democracy. it's really kind of a strange thing because you have this population that cheers on these wars, and yet they have no concept of what they actually are. It's truly blissful ignorance. They cheer it on. That's why people say, well, how come Americans, the American government wages all these wars and starts all these wars all over the world, and the American people, seem okay with it? Well, that's becoming less so. But be that as it may, it's because it doesn't affect them personally. If you told the average American that, to imagine bombs going off in their cities, they can't wrap their heads around. Not really. They picture some movie they saw and say, wow, that's crazy. But they don't really picture it. Now, if you said this to a European who had stories passed down from their grandparents about what it was like when bombs were going off in their cities, it's more real for them. Americans don't have that experience. They don't understand it. They can't really conceptualize it because it's not a real experience. It's something that always happens somewhere else. And so they wind up flag waving. You got all of these, people are getting less enthusiastic about the wars, but you got to understand, I don't care if people be like, America needs to back off all these wars, and people are getting fatigued with it, tired of it. People complaining. I'm going to tell you what, most of them people are just one false flag away from dusting off the flag and talking about support our troops. Dude, one false flag. That's all it takes. I'm telling you, that's it. And you say, but it would be obvious. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how obvious it is. You got to remember, these are the people that in a patriotic fervor after 9/11 thought somehow Iraq had something to do with the Twin Towers. When it had nothing to do with that. And they didn't question it. Because you're either with the terrorists or you're with our troops and our heroes. That's it. This is the functioning, the average American mind. And finally, because I want to get to the last point, and I know we're running way long here. But I wanted to get through these points because they're funny. I think they're funny. Y'all may not think they're funny. It ain't nothing funny about it. And finally, if there's one thing that wraps up the quintessential American experience, and that is the melting pot. The melting pot is a lot less effective on the younger generations, but it is a truly indoctrinated on the baby boomers and to a certain extent on Gen Xers such as myself, not me, obviously, but for sure the baby boomers and part of Gen X, the melting pot. When I was a little kid, they had melting pot propagandas on Saturday morning. We used to have Saturday morning cartoons. We didn't have cartoon networks. We didn't have the internet. You got cartoons one day of the week, and that was Saturday mornings, and you would watch Saturday mornings. And then they would have this government propaganda that would come on during like commercial breaks to indoctrinate you in these things. And I remember one of them was about the melting pot and what made America different, because all these people from around the world, and they came and they went into the pot and they got melted and turned into Americans. You see, they quit being Germans. They quit being Finns. They quit being whatever the hell else. And they melted into the pot and became a new thing. The American identity. They became America. It was a lie, obviously. Now, one of the things that's humorous about this is I will read articles by very smart Americans who happen to be boomers, and they will talk about the failure of diversity. You'll read this big, long article really breaking down and discussing how diversity is tearing this country apart. And you got all of these different groups and they're all fighting. It's just a mess. But then they will wrap it up with, we abandoned the melting pot. They can't wrap their minds around the idea that the melting pot was a lie all along. The melting pot was a trick. And they'll go on about, oh my gosh, how bad this diversity, and the diversity experiment is not working out, and you've got these groups, and there's all this conflict and tensions in groups against other groups and things. And they'll say, we quit being a melting pot? And they don't understand. It was never a melting pot. It was a lie. It was a trick. It was just, oh yeah, we're totally a melting pot. Let more of us in. You know. And then when the melting pot was not useful anymore, out the door went the melting pot. It's just like peaceful protests. When peaceful protests suited the powers that be, it was all about that. And now everybody confused. How come we can't peacefully protest? How come that doesn't work anymore? The Statue of Liberty and my melting pot. It is America. America is a melting pot. The foundation of America. We all became melting pot Americans, and we all became all of these different species. Went into the melting pot, and they came out into a new breed of man, the American man, in his mobility scooter, the American. Ask an American, what lineage are you? Well, I'm part English, part Irish, Welsh. There's some Welsh in there. I think there's some German way back in there. And we went into the melting pot and we came out. And it is, by the definition, if you were a dog, it would be the mutt. Well, y'all are going to wrap up on that. We are going to wrap up on that note. I hope you had some fun with today's show. I had fun discussing it. Went way long. I'm sorry it went way long. I hope we kept it interesting, though, for this 45 minutes. Hope you got a chuckle out of it. Hope you enjoy your weekend. As always, keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.